Knowledge is the fuel that powers intelligent buying and selling. So get a quick recharge with me, Ron Edwards, Master Sommelier and Director of Wine Education for Winebow, Fine Wine, and Spirits. Welcome back to WineSmart. Today we're going to talk about the very important topic of food and wine pairing. And we're going to just talk about one aspect of food and wine pairing. We're going to talk about acidity. Acidity in food and acidity in wine, and how do we make them work together? And what else do we need to think about when we talk about wines that have prominent acidity or not? And in order to have that conversation, we got to get level set and talk about something that we can keep constant. And that is not so easy when we use terms like moderate acidity, high acidity, low acidity. We can, however, start talking about pH. pH is a measure of acidity, one of several. And I'm using that one because it allowed me to compare it to food items so that we could have a meeting of the minds. And what it measures is the potential hydrogen or power of hydrogen. It's how many hydrogen ions are available in the solution. More hydrogen ions means stronger acidity. So let's just get some basics about pH. A high pH wine would be in the range of 4, maybe a little over 4, which is a bit dangerous because that's when you start to expose yourself to biologic problems. A low pH wine would be in the range of maybe 2.8, which would be like Mosel Riesling or Champagne. But pH is a logarithmic scale, and 7 is neutral, which is water. And the logarithmic scale is made so that a change of 1.0 is a power of 10. Yes, that means that the difference between a 4.0 pH and a 3.0 pH is 10 times as much acidity. So a 3.0 pH wine has 10 times as much acidity as a 4.0. That's an easy way to look at it. I don't want to get into the chemistry because I would fumble all over it anyway, but the whole point is that this scale is showing you big changes in small numbers. So that range we had from 4.0 to 2.8 pH for wines is only 1.2 pH measurements, but that's a lot. Let's talk about some actual food items that you can latch on to and say, oh, okay, so this is what pH means when I taste this. I'm going to talk about some common things that we all know about. Lemon juice is a 2.0 to 2.6. Almost no wines in the world that you actually want to drink are going to get anywhere near that. There are a few great champagne vintages that hit 2.6, but in general, this is well below the pH of wine, which is why you have to be careful with how much lemon juice you put in anything that is going to be with wine. Lime juice, 2.0 to 2.35, same thing. Tomato puree in a lot of different dishes, right? 4.3 to 4.7, a little bit above most wines. Vine-ripened tomatoes, 4.42 to 4.65. And then there's the infamous ketchup, also known as tomato gastrique, 3.89 to 3.92. That one's tough on wine because it's going to conflict. Did you know that whole milk is acidic? Yes, 6.6. Not a lot, but some. Mushrooms, also acidic, 6.0 to 6.7. Butter, 6.1 to 6.4. Vinegar, all right, so distilled white vinegar, probably around 2.4. Balsamic vinegar, probably around 3.4. And then everything in between. Apple cider vinegar, for instance, is more towards the 3.4 side. Pomegranate, yes, definitely a tart red fruit, in case there's ever an argument. 2.93 to 3.2. Potatoes are even acidic, 5.4 to 5.9. And here's an example of an apple, because apples are in a lot of things. Macintosh apple, 3.34. Blueberries, 3.1 if they're frozen, 3.3 if they're fresh. Florida orange, fresh off the shelf, 3.69 to 4.34. So let's compare that to some real-world knowledge about wine. All right, so Riesling globally ranges from about 2.8 to 3.2. That's pretty tart, which is why sometimes they have sugar, sometimes they don't. Champagne, 2.8 to 3.0. Again, very tart. Assyrtiko from Santorini, 2.9 to 3.1. Chardonnay from Chablis, 3.1 to 3.3. California Chardonnay, 3.4 to 3.6. Tuscan Sangiovese kind of averages out at 3.5 all the time. Bordeaux ranges from 3.5 to 3.7. depending on what grape you're talking about. You know, there's going to be exceptions to all of these rules from somebody. And then Napa Cabernet Sauvignon, 3.6 to 4.0. So let's talk about pairing principles, because we're all pretty good at remembering what made us happy when we tasted it, right? So let's talk about things that we already know we like And then we'll expand that into a food and wine pairing. Salty and tangy. We love that. Ketchup and french fries. Mm-hmm. Potato chips and sour cream dip. Yep. Salt and lime tortilla chips. Sounds good. Apple slices and peanut butter. All those are a great example of salty and tangy coming together. Sweet and tangy. Margarita. Mm-hmm. Lemonade. Apple pie. Sugar on grapefruit. All of those are taking those two interactions and making magic out of them. Tart and fat. It works well together. White wine butter sauce, perfect example. Goat's cheese and cheddar cheese are examples of how fat and acid work together to be happy. Now, what we do is we take those principles and put them in real life, right? So we squeeze lemon on our fish. We put lime on our tacos. We drizzle a little balsamic vinegar over our sauteed greens, all making flavors pop. So let's put this into the realm of, all right, what am I going to do with wine? Now that I know that wine is an acidic beverage and sometimes highly acidic beverage. So acidity and saltiness in food are going to need a balancing act that's favorable to them in the counterpart of the wine. Favorable counterparts to acidity and saltiness in food are acidity in wine, which calms saltiness and reduces the impression of overall tartness in the dish in the wine. Sugar covers acidity and is a foil to salt. Think of that margarita, think lemonade, etc. Perception of saltiness in wines can be there, and that can be a foil to acidity as well as saltiness. Unfavorable counterparts. Alcohol doesn't really do anything for acidity and is amplified by salt. Tannin can be amplified by acidity, so you have to be careful there. And salt and tannin are just sort of neutral. So now what we want to do is we want to use the wine and its acidic componentry the same way a chef would use ingredients that are acidic on the plate. So if you have a salt-cured item that's a dominant flavor on the plate, then you want a low pH wine to calm that saltiness. And an example would be something under 3.5 for sure, like Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, Cool Climate Chardonnay, Assyrtiko, Dolcetto, Sangiovese, Cool Climate Pinot Noir. All of those wines have the right kind of pH as a beginning point. The dish features a pop of acidity, like a citrus or a fruit sauce or a drizzle of vinegar or tomato sauce or goat's cheese. Look for a wine that delivers an expected pH below what the expected pH of the item on the plate is. So something below tomato sauce, something below that splash of citrus all encompassed, which is where you're heading in that, you know, realm of 2.8 to 3.5, depending on what the dish is. When you have vinegar involved, that one's tough because that range is really low, 2.5 to 3.4 in pH, which makes wine difficult to pair, which is why we only want vinegar in accents and not a major componentry. That classic gastrique sauce on a plate where it's a lot of vinegar and sugar, that's just disaster for wine. Citrus accents, you know, we're not talking about drowning something in lemon juice, but accenting it with that. These are things like actual pieces of citrus require low pH wines. Citrus accents like the lemon zest in Gremolata or just lemon zest as an accent or citrus zest in general, those are going to be just fine with those mid-range pH wines in the world of wine, you know, that 3.5 range. Citrus leans towards a white wine requirement, but if it's just a zest on something or whatever, then we can start moving into red wines as well, because Gremolata, for instance, is wonderful on meat with Nebbiolo and Sangiovese and other red wines. When we run into sweetness, but the dish is still primarily savory, the refreshingness of the tartness of a wine can help minimize the impression of sweetness. You do, however, want to have texture as part of your wine. You don't want to go too lean here because sweetness kind of automatically makes things feel richer in texture, and you don't want to have the dish outweigh your wine. If your dish has strong bitter elements, like bitter greens, look for that middle ground of pH. So I want to keep in mind that we have pulled acidity completely out of the context of the rest of the dish and the rest of the wine. And so all the things I've talked about have to be balanced with the rest of the componentry. They can't be taken on their own. So keep in mind that we're going to talk about the rest of the components as we go through this, and then you take that and put it all together to decide what wine you want. And let me close with a little thought for our culinary professionals who might be listening. And I love that you're listening because that means that the guest experience is going to get better, because you and your sommelier or you and your wine director are definitely going to be able to talk one-to-one instead of missing each other in the middle. Consider wine one of the ingredients of the dish. Leave a hole in the dish that is filled by the wine or the targeted wine or a targeted group of wines. I know this is an uncomfortable thought for a chef because it's art that you're creating and it matters that it might not be complete when it leaves your hands, but the overall experience that the guest is going to get, if there's a hole in the dish for the wine, is going to be far better than the dish complete without the wine. Check out the show notes for a link to the Clemson University chart that gave me all of those food pH levels, as well as a video overview of wine and food pairing from my LinkedIn account. Until next time.